welcome you to our first Aspiring Mormon Women podcast, and we are thrilled today to be able to interview Susan Madsen, who is quite famous here in Utah for her work with the Utah Women in Education Initiative. And so I'm going to let her go ahead and tell you a little bit about herself.
Well, I've lived in Utah about 12 years now. I actually have four children. They're 17, 20, 24, and 25 now. And live in the Highland area and love it here. I am a full professor at Utah Valley University, and also the Orrin R. Woodbury Professor of Leadership and Ethics. And so for the last decade, I've been just passionate about researching the lifetime development of high-profile women leaders to figure out how do we help more women, more girls, develop leadership and become leaders. And about 4 years ago, I started the Utah Women in Education Project. The Commissioner of Higher Education for the state had asked me to, he knew I cared about girls, he knew I cared about women, and asked me to really do some exploration in the state on why more women were not graduating from college. And we'll talk about that, I think, a little bit more in the interview.
Tell us a little bit about your early personal history, and you can include in that your educational background, how you felt about school.
I was actually raised in Utah when I was born here and raised until I was about 11. I come from a very strong LDS family. My father was a seminary and institute person. All of his life taught seminary in Kearns, in Utah area, and then did institute in various places that we lived throughout. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, but very involved in our lives and very involved in going to institute classes and learning in a lot of different ways. I have six brothers, one older and five younger. Skipping ahead a little bit, all of us ended up going on LDS missions, all seven of us. And all of us got married in the temple. So we really had a good upbringing with my father being in seminaries and institutes, a very spiritual home, read scriptures every morning, had family evening, did all of those things. But one thing that really influenced me was watching my father get his education. So when I was 7 and 8, we actually, one summer, I think I was 8 that summer, we actually moved to Wymount Terrace for the summer at BYU, and my dad was finishing his master's degree. And I have such great memories of being on BYU campus, and I was in whatever dorm has stairs that come up to kind of a pyramid. I don't know which one that is at BYU. But I have great memories of just running around campus and feeling the excitement of being on campus and watching my dad study, and my mom was on the typewriter typing his papers and whiting out and all of those things. I still remember that. So that was my first, really, when I was 8, getting on campuses and feeling the excitement of that. When I was a little bit older, my dad started his doctorate degree. And we lived in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho at the time, but we had two summers when I was 15 and 16 where we moved the family down and lived in apartments so my dad could do his doctoral work. And that was quite, quite memorable to me. I knew because of my mother's support for him and because of you know, the sacrifice and moving down and getting the education, how important education was to him. And I remember just watching the whole process, never thinking, even though I had six brothers, never thinking I wasn't supposed to be educated. I mean, we were all supposed to be educated. My mother was very close to her RN degree, but dropped out a semester before when she got married. But she was always reading the scriptures, always reading about church history, always helping my dad, very supportive of my dad. So I think that was very, you know, influential in my life. I always knew that I would be an educated person. And one of the things that really influenced me as well, being an LDS person, is when I was 14, I had my patriarchal blessing. And actually, there was an interesting paragraph. There is an interesting paragraph in my patriarchal blessing that talks about me being educated, that I would continue my education, and not just informally, said scholastic education, that I will become a teacher and that I will speak and be influential in helping people in their lives. And so I always knew, as I watched my dad, and I had this patriarchal blessing at 14 before we went to BYU those last couple of summers, I knew I would be educated like my father. And I think that has been helpful for me in my life, to know that it was part of the Lord's plan that I finish my bachelor's, which I did, but that I continue. So I was able to, I took a little break, had a couple of kids, and after my oldest two, we finally got through with my husband's two master's degrees, moved to Portland, Oregon, immediately. I mean, I won't take too long to tell you stories, but it was just so meant to be that I just happened, when we were in Portland a couple of months before looking for housing, walked on campus, happened to find the right people, was able to figure out what degree, and within just a month or two was able to start some weekend classes at Portland State University. And my kids were little. They were 6 months and two when I started, and some people were saying, well, that's kind of crazy. But you know what? That was a great time to get my master's degree. I actually taught a lot of piano lessons, and I traded piano lessons for babysitting. And I would go 2 afternoons a week to school, and I would have a babysitter, you know, who was happy to have my children a couple afternoons a week because I was able to give her kids piano lessons. And so it's an interesting kind of thing, but I was able to go part-time and then full-time 2 summers for 4 weeks. My mother-in-law would come out and stay with the kids, and I was able to finish my master's degree in 2 years, actually, with the two kids. And I was still able to be home and be a mom and work part-time. I used to haul my kids around to teach, do exercise kinds of things, and so forth. And then we actually moved to Southern California for a while, did some various things that were influential in my life, but didn't go to school during those years, had 2 more kids. And then we moved to Minnesota. And a year into that, I knew my master's wasn't all of the education I was supposed to do. Again, I would read my patriarchal blessing, I would pray, I would just really want to know what the Lord's plan was for me, not just that I wanted to do it, but you know, the Lord can see so many things beyond what we can see in our lives. And I needed to make sure I was on the right track, with myself, with my family, and the Lord, and felt very guided into a program at the University of Minnesota that was flexible. I looked at various programs. Some of them were so not flexible. You went all day, but I had 4 kids, and I knew I needed to go to school, but I needed one that would work with my kids and my family, and was able to find one that was just wonderful and flexible to be able to do that. So with 4 kids, ranging, I started when my youngest was in preschool and my oldest was probably 11. So 3 to 11, I started my doctoral work at the University of Minnesota, evening classes mostly, but I was able to do all my campus work and different things while my youngest was in preschool, my other kids were in school. And so it's been an interesting journey through the years with children, getting the degrees, but knowing that was the plan, that I needed to do that to get that education, to be able to prepare my life for the things that Heavenly Father wanted me to do. And that can be, you know, related to being a mom, being a church member, and being effective in different ways. I'm not, although I was a Relief Society president earlier, and I started a whole family history center and all of these different things, actually my education was probably helpful in that. You know, when I was Relief Society president, I used to cook meals a lot and do all that, and I canned and whatever. Didn't love it all, but did it. But always knew that I maybe had kind of a different plan from the Lord to be able to be an influence not only in my home and my church, but in the community and in other people's lives as well. And so again, I made my choices through the years on knowing that the Lord had a plan for me, that He loved me, and that I needed to be prepared in all ways, including my mind and my heart and my soul and my passion and my intelligence, for all of the things the Lord had in store for me.
How did you balance those spheres of work, school, family, church? Maybe your spouse was one of the ways that it helped balance, but what were the techniques that you used to help you?
That's a tough one. I actually did my whole dissertation many, many years ago on work-life conflict.
Really?
And its relationship to telecommuting and teleworking. So I studied and I've published some on that area. So, you know, it's very interesting. And sometimes now in the literature, we don't even try to call it balance, because that means everything is equal. And that's a little bit tricky to do. Well, I personally, I don't have any magic things, but I'll ramble about a few things. But I knew that I needed to keep busy. I'm a person that keeps busy. So I took on challenges that a lot of people wouldn't, but I would have been bored to death if I would have taken them on. I did not work full-time until my youngest was in second grade. But I found that I needed to be in school or work part-time or different things. My master's was actually in exercise physiology. And so I taught exercise. I did lectures. Clear back in about 1990, I started teaching just an evening class at a community college or a university in the evenings. And that was wonderful for me. I was able to prepare, so I read all of the time. I could go out in the evening. My husband would take care of the kids. Sometimes we would need another person to help drive if I was stuck in a class and we had two kids needing to be at two different things. But sometimes I look back and I think, how did I do all of that? But I had some real priorities. First was that I wanted to be home in the mornings. My husband sometimes took some mornings to get the kids up, and to get the scriptures read, and to get them on their way. So most mornings I did that. So oftentimes I would be working on my computer by 4 or 5 in the morning, then would stop and get the kids up. But another important phase was I wanted to be home most of the time when my kids got home from school. My husband helped, I believe, one morning a week with the scriptures. No, maybe two, and then he did one afternoon. So, but, and then I usually hired one person to do another afternoon after school because I had to teach late on a specific day. So I just wanted to still be the mom, you know, but a lot of times through the years, until my son was in second grade, I really tried to still manage everything at home. So I was organizing carpools. And the thing that I found is, and I actually coached many teams, that if I coached the teams, I had a whole group of moms that would do all the work. And then I could have them all on the days that I wasn't teaching or in school. And then I had rides for my kids and, you know, I had did carpools and so forth. So it got a little crazy sometimes. But was able, because I helped organize things in the community and with teams, to kind of do that. My husband's a good guy. Greg is his name. And he pretty much goes to work, stays at work all day and whatever. But he really has been helpful through the years. He's very dependable and responsible. So we would split and conquer on carpools and games in the evenings and so forth. So I think, you know, sometimes it's gotten so crazy through the years. But just with constant communication with the spouse, with just thinking ahead and planning on kids, doing volunteering to organize the carpool system so that you could get the days you want to take the carpools, you know, all of that. I was in the middle of all of that to make that work. So all of our kids did multiple sports constantly. So some Saturdays we had at least 3 games, sometimes 4. Yeah. But you know what? Those were good years. Those were good years. But I really felt like being here after school and being flexible. The kids would come in and they would stop by and we'd talk and get organized after our kids were in school was really important. So it's not been easy.
Yeah.
But it's been worth it. It really has. It's been worth it to be a mom of four kids that who I love dearly. It's been worth it to put the energies towards my undergraduate, my master's, and my doctorate degrees, and all of them have prepared me for what I'm doing now. It's been worth it to be active in the church through the years and doing the callings that I've been asked to do. You know, it's been worth it to do all of that. Still have some space here and there in life.
Yeah.
But have a very supportive husband who doesn't have any problem with a strong woman, a woman who can succeed, a woman that gets attention. I'm on the news, different things. He doesn't have any trouble with that and finds real joy in my success and my happiness as well.
That's amazing.
I think that's uncommon for some.
Yeah, that's terrific. So how, you said that you went back to school in second grade,
when your youngest
was in second grade. How did you go back into the working world? Was it a difficult transition, or maybe it was natural as part of your finishing your doctorate? How did you go back into
it? Actually, through the years, the only year or two that I did not do this were right when I started having kids. When I first had my kid, my husband was at BYU. We were poor. So, you know, after I got married, I actually taught junior high for a couple of years, and then I started having kids. When I had my first two kids, and they were only 18 months apart, I really kind of quit everything else I was doing in life. And looking back, that was not the right thing to do, but we didn't have any money. We really didn't even have a second car. And so I felt like I needed to be only at home with the kids and couldn't really do anything else. I kind of put a box around me. So I really struggled with those years. But after that time, when I started in my master's program, from then until now, no matter what phase I was at in life, I always stayed involved in something professional. So I've never truly had a gap. I don't think I planned on that, but for instance, when my kids were little, my master's degree, and then started doing some lectures. I did some exercise teaching too, but I did some lectures in the evening. And then I started teaching a little bit. So even though I wasn't working full-time, I still was doing a few things. When I got to California, actually, that's when I was Relief Society president, but I still was involved with the YWCA, with some hospitals, just here and there doing some lectures and so forth, a little bit of teaching. But I also, when I had a little bit more time, I get a little stir crazy and didn't want to commit to another job because I liked to have my choices of just jumping in and teaching when I wanted to. I actually, by then, had my master's degree, and I was able to be very involved with the city of Highland, California, on their creating what was called the Youth Accountability Board, and also sitting as a board member of the YMCA. So I did not get paid for those. But you know, I absolutely did professional work for those organizations. And so all through the years, I just kept a little bit, whether it was nonprofit, whether it was, I kept my professional just a little bit, counseling here, you know, did different things here and there. So when I decided to go back in the workforce full time, first of all, I knew I would be a professor, but I wanted that because it was flexible. I teach 2 days a week, could work at home 2 or 3 days a week, which I did. So I was, my kids, if they were sick, I could run and get them most days because I was working at home. When I decided to make that, it wasn't a real transition for me because I had not gone from nothing to something. And some people think, well, teaching once a week or whatever is not really helpful. I didn't know until I'm looking back now how incredibly important that was for my career, even though I was maybe only teaching a 2.5, 3-hour class one night a week. What it has done is kept my career, and I've been teaching for 20-something years, but that doesn't mean I've been working for 20-something years full-time.
Yeah.
So I would really, that is one of the beauties of having a bachelor's and master's particularly, is that you can really get involved in boards and some things where you can pick how much you're going to give. And when your kids are sick, you can say, no, I can't go. And you can do these things.
Yeah. You have a lot of flexibility when you get more education.
Absolutely.
And that actually reminds me of my favorite advice that I ever received about a career was just to keep an oar in. You know, you don't have to be all the way in all the time. But even if you keep something to stay current, that's really helpful.
You know, in the research that I've conducted on the women in education, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, one perception that we found in the sample of women in Utah was they really felt, particularly about education, but I expect it is the same for other things, that it's all or nothing. That, you know, as soon as they have that first baby, they need to drop out of school. It's all about college when they're in college. It's all about home when they're in home. It's all about, you know, whatever that next phase is. And I think I thought that when I was younger, too. And then after that first couple of years of having little kids, thinking, wait, you know, I need to mix things up. I need to be doing other things. I can take my kids to do them or whatever. What you just said was so true, that there are ways. I mean, you get your education for different purposes, and you can use that in multiple ways. But we need to have women's voices in the legislature. We need to have women's voices in, you know, town meetings. We need, and your education prepares you mentally in, you know, speaking skills, critical thinking skills, so many different ways. And we don't have to give that up. We don't have to say, now I can only cook and stay home and change diapers. There's time in our, we have dishwashers. We have washers. You know, it doesn't take all day to do those things, but we have, we need to be prepared to really help in different ways. So it's not all or nothing. We may not be able to work full time when we have little kids. We may not even want to. You know, we may not be able to train for a marathon when we have little kids because it's hard to get, it's more stressful sometimes to get babysitters and so forth for your kids. But there's a nice level of participation and involvement, I think, that we can implement in our lives to have us continuing to do what we've been trained educationally to do, but just to keep that going. So I've learned that through the years. That's been a very powerful lesson for me.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple things about this, but I wanted to ask more specifically, did you face specific stereotypes or criticisms as a Mormon woman going after an education or being a career woman? Were there specific negative experiences that affected you?
You know, I was raised with six brothers, and I was an athlete, so I was pretty tough along the way. I have developed kind of a thick skin. I think I used to get offended a little bit more. I used to hold grudges a little bit more. I've realized that those things are just not what Heavenly Father wants us to do at all. But I think I had some self-imposed feelings that other people would be judging me for a little bit. But, you know, at a certain point, and I think it was when I moved to Minnesota, I wasn't around LDS people so much. The church was quite kind of a long ways away. I didn't have people in my neighborhood, no one to help with the kids or anything. I kind of moved past that. I know when I came to Utah, sometimes I felt that. But I'll tell you, I have had to just really, I just don't care what people think about me anymore. It doesn't really matter. And if they have time, my daughter will quote me on this, I will say sometimes if I hear that someone's gossiped, I don't even hear that anymore. I just say they have too much time in their lives. they're not doing something right. Or if I start gossiping, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be doing that.
Gotta get busy.
So I think it's hard, though, when we have these, you know, sometimes we're overly sensitive to that kind of criticism. But basically, to be honest, I haven't heard it. I know people probably talk about me, but I haven't heard it. And I'm not going to act differently at church thinking that maybe someone's talking about me. And this has taken me some years to figure out. What I know is that I need to be square with the Lord. And I need to make sure my decisions are good for my family. And I talk to my spouse about everything. And anything beyond that, worrying about other people, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to, then I shouldn't do that. And that's a challenge for some people. I think sometimes we're too sensitive because we're feeling, am I supposed to do this or whatever? Are people looking down? Who cares? It's probably
that's
not
good.
The right answer.
No,
but in
great.
General, you know, you just do what you're supposed to do, what you feel is right, what you've prayed about, what your patriarchal blessing tells you to do, and then you move forward. And I'll say this in a different way, but my goal has been to try and move forward with grace. Because that's better for everybody. That's better for my family. That's better. And not to waste energy or time worrying about other people and what they think.
That's great. Something to aspire to. Was there a specific spiritual experience or guidance that you felt as you have pursued your education and developed your career?
You know, I have really tried my best. I was a person that was raised with a traditional mom. I didn't really know I was going to be working and doing things as much as I did. I just knew that I was being prepared. The Lord wanted me to be prepared to make an impact in people's lives in different ways. So I've really tried through the years, and I have talked about my patriarchal blessing and so forth, and I've wrestled with the Lord. I've struggled some of these times to make the right choice. I'll tell you about one experience. About, I would say, 4.5 years ago, I had been a professor for a while. I had finished my writing books. I was at the end of my books. I had published all these articles. I had met all my quotas. I have all these task lists and goals of things. And I had been encouraged by many, many to be an administrator in a college campus, which would take away some of my autonomy. Well, for about 1.5 years, I struggled with praying and just not getting inspiration and I kept moving, I kept trying. And I was getting a little frustrated. I'm not the most patient person in the Lord, but I really needed guidance. Do I stay as a professor? Do I move into this other thing? I knew it would impact the family, but really wrestled through that. During that time, right at the end of that period of time, this whole thing about the Utah Woman in Education started kind of coming up, and people were talking to me about that, but it was still kind of sitting out there. But I'll tell you, it was about 4 years ago, I would say, a little bit more than 4 years ago, that I decided to just move in another direction, in the administrative direction. And I just said to the Lord, okay, I'm moving. I haven't gotten an answer. I'm moving. And I had a flight from Paris to Salt Lake, a direct flight. And I had a whole row of seats to myself. And I put my computer, I had everything organized, and I had, I don't know how many hours that was. And I will tell you, sorry, get a little teary-eyed, that plane trip, I had probably 4 hours of absolute pure inspiration come to me. I had my journal, I had my ensign, I was listening to conference talks. I was setting myself up to, and I just had peace on the plane. And I'll tell you, for 4 hours, I wrote inspiration. And when I landed, I knew what my next directions were. And it was such a miracle in my life and such a tender mercy to feel that love and that caring from my Heavenly Father, that He knew my life was important and my decisions were important. And when I walked off, I knew for sure, even though I have a lot of skills to manage and lead, that I was not to go into administration, that I was to stay as a faculty, that because I would stay as a faculty, I do work on women and leadership in the Middle East. I mean, who wants to sit in meetings when you can start changing the world for women in the Middle East? Made that decision, and immediately after that, just really had things came together, and I started the Utah Women in Education Project. And I would not have done that if I would have gone in the other direction. And the last 4 years, I mean, it has been so clear that this is the direction the Lord wanted me to go, that I can help change things in the state so more women are prepared in their lives, so more women feel that confidence, so more women have more stable environments in case things happen in their family situation. And I just, I mean, thinking back, that was a pivotal time in my life to be able to be on that plane and have that inspiration. So I think that was one of my biggest aha. I've had a lot of those. The Lord has to kind of hit me in the head. I'm like, tell me what to do. And, you know, I get these little promptings here and there. You know, I'm a return missionary, so I've really tried to work with how to feel the Spirit and all of those. But sometimes it's the same thing, you know, when I finally got engaged, the Lord's like, yeah. He's the right one. You've got to do it. So.
That's great. Well, that's the perfect segue into the next question. Can you tell us about what the Utah Women in Education Initiative is and how you became interested in it?
I love talking about this. Yeah. So as I mentioned, I absolutely have thrived, and I've been working for the last decade on understanding how we can develop more girls and women into leaders. So how can we help them be more confident, be influential? I mean, the Lord has a plan for women. He needs us to be strong. He needs us to be vocal. He needs us to also be supportive, but He needs us to be, you know, very strong and competent women. The pioneer women were amazing. If we look at those stories, they were amazing and strong women. So as a piece of this research, and I've published books and articles on this, there was a segment I started teaching or talking and doing some speeches about the powerful influence of college on helping women develop leadership. So many people had listened to me talk on this, and the Commissioner of Higher Education, who had been the UVU president, who knew me well, said, you know, we need to do some work on figuring out, we do have lower numbers of women graduating from college than the rest of the nation. And if you would like, you know, I would like you to take on a research project to understand that. He basically said, you know, I know you care about girls, you care about women, you're doing this work on women, and education is so important to help leadership, to help us be competent, that, you know, I think you'd be interested in this. And I have an educational background as well, so even though I'm in a school of business. So that's actually how I started this work about 4 years ago. Asked for a sabbatical that next year so that I could spend all my work and efforts on this, brought together groups of teams. I am a kind of a change agent. I'm a kind of a social entrepreneur. So instead of just conducting research in general, you know, I wanted to start the movement, start the discussion, start the change effort. And so started that and was able to find funding, worked very hard, had a lot of very supportive colleagues, made connections with everyone across the state. I mean, all institutions now involved, the governor's office. So our initial project was called the Utah Women in Education Project. And so that's what we've worked under for a number of years. And basically, the purpose of this project is to understand and then help motivate, understand why more women in Utah are making the choices they are about their education. So why are they not going to college? Why are they dropping out after a few semesters if that was their choice? Why did they stay and graduate from college? Why are they, you know, we wanted to understand and then compare those and see if there were some themes that emerged that will help us change things, help change perceptions, change aspirations, change structures to help more women in Utah not just go to college, but stay long enough to actually graduate and get their degrees, get their associate degrees, particularly and hopefully their bachelor's degrees, and then continue with higher education. So I think that really is the reason that we did. The state in general needs, we've been above the national average for a long time on how many people are educated in this state, but we're losing that advantage. Men actually were lower with men, and we just need a lot more women. We used to be above with women, but the last 20 years, the nation has increased. So we are now, as a percentage, we have a 6% gap in the state between men and women who hold bachelor's degrees. And we don't really like that. Yeah. We want our women to be. And you know what? I've done so much research on quotes in the church. And, you know, there's a lot of support. Brigham Young has a great quote that says, oh, I'm going to butcher it, but it basically says, if I had to choose between educating my daughters and sons, I would educate my daughters because of the role they have with educating their children. So more educated mothers have more educated sons and more educated daughters. Mm-hmm. So that's really how I became interested. Again, it links with my desire to help women, to see them progress. Getting your college education can do so much for women in their lives, whether they work outside the home or whether they choose to work for and not get paid. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a lot of work in the home.
So tell us about the study that you did. I know that was a central part of your work.
Yeah, we did. We've done a couple of different kinds of studies, collecting data and different things, but the major study was a study that we did throughout the state and collect original information on these kinds of things that I've just talked about. So we wanted to understand the influences in their lives. We couldn't just have them do a quick survey, 1 through 5, do you strongly agree or disagree? We needed to get into their lives and stories and understand their perceptions. So we really started with the influence of their parents and collected that. What are things that they happened in their homes and who influenced them? Who's saying, what were their mothers saying, their fathers? What are the influence of counselors in the schools and religious leaders? And we've got data for young women's leaders and bishops in the LDS church. What did they do in junior high and high school? And then, you know, all of those elements. And then we linked it to, did they graduate from college? They didn't go to college. And we looked at all of that data and figured out, what are the differences between the women that didn't graduate or dropped out early versus the ones that did? Look back in their lives. Were there different practices in their homes? Were there different influences on those women? The bottom line is that we were able to collect the information to give us some really good ideas of now how do we move forward and help young women, girls, start that process of really wanting to go to college and graduate from college. So we have lots and lots of results from that. I could speak, you've heard me speak.
I have.
But I can speak for a good, you know, half day with no problem, with no notes on all of the results. But, you know, just...
Tell us some of them.
Yeah.
Tell us
one thing that was so surprising to us is that we found that women in Utah, in our sample at least, always planned to just go to college, but not necessarily graduate. So they went 1 year and said, that was my goal, I'm done. And they didn't graduate. So that's a big thing, because if you aspire to go to college and just go for a year or two, but you don't aspire to graduate, you're not going to graduate. And that really answers some of the questions, you know, on why we don't have as many women graduating, because they don't think that's important. Yet it really is important for lots of different reasons. We found another thing we found are those women who actually started saving their own money. Elementary school was the best when they were young, were those that ended up graduating. So, I mean, middle school was still good, but elementary school, I mean, the statistics said the younger, the better. So the ones that said they started conversations early, the younger, the better, were those that ended up graduating. Those who just started talking in high school were less likely to go. Sometimes they would, though, because they would have some strong influences. But oftentimes, they were not. But statistically, that was another thing. As I mentioned earlier, one of the findings that was pretty striking to us as well is that many women really feel like their life is in these silos, that they couldn't integrate, that they were in high school, now they were in college, now they were in, you know, had family, and they couldn't go to college, or they couldn't work or part-time. They just needed to do one thing at a time. As we know, once we start having kids, life is about integration. We may not be able to go to school full-time with kids. I never, you know, I hardly ever did full-time. I did a lot of part-time. But we can do some different things at the same time, and it's actually pretty healthy for us to do that. So their perceptions of, I can only do one thing at a time, that's a good finding for us to realize, because now we can do something different. We can give them options. You know what? You can go to school in the evening, and here are some courses. There are online courses. It gives us some perspective of how to do that. I also, in our research, something so important was the influence and the conversations, how important conversations are to these young girls and young women. And these longer-term parent conversations were important in everything, but one thing that I talk about when I speak a lot is sometimes it was only conversations that happened in a moment. And I call them transformational moments, that a young woman's leader or a bishop or an employer, someone would just say to these people, and maybe it was only a minute or two, but they would say, do you know, I mean, you have such a good mind with business. You really need to go to college, and you need to go into this because you have a good strategic look at this, or you're good with finances, or you're such a good counselor. You really need to go into psychology and get, or just to say, you know, you're gifted in writing. You're so good. I mean, when these women told us about what influenced them in their lives when they were thinking back, these moments were critical. The longer-term relationships were very important as well. But sometimes we think we're so busy, and we are, and we think we don't have time for this. Like high school principals, that's what I heard. They're like not interested, most of our high school principals in our data, not interested in talk. They don't have time to talk to people. Yeah, you're walking down the hall, you can talk to somebody on your way down. But it's changed the way I do things. You know, in a few moments, you're just standing there talking to a youth, and you can turn your head and say, what do you love? What are you going to go to college? Where are you going to graduate from college? You know what? I've noticed you are good with this and this. These are some of your strengths and gifts. What we found in our research are those make a huge impact on young women's lives and their decisions.
The importance of mentors, yeah. Even if it's just in a moment.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So those are a few.
I remember that you said something also about how some women, how it related to getting married, that some women felt that if their husbands had education, that they
yes.
didn't need an education
yeah.
or things like that. What was some of the data that you found relating to that?
So we did find those perceptions that some of the women said, you know, I don't need to be educated because my husband is getting the degree. And he will be the one that's working, and he's the one that needs that education. What we found, our big finding, and this is one of our top 10 findings, is that many of the young women did not understand the true broad value of what a higher education degree, a college degree was. When they say that, they're thinking that a college degree is only, which is important still, about getting a job and working. That's why they're saying, well, my husband will get this. But when we look at the research, a college degree is about getting a job or having a job to fall back on or being self-reliant as a family. But it's also about better parenting skills. It's also about having better, being better prepared and having a desire to help in the community. They're being able to think better. Oh my gosh, to keep up with teenagers, is, you need to be able to really understand society, how things are working. You need to understand drugs. You need to understand all these things. College degrees, people who have college degrees have better learning skills. They have better life learning skills. Even if you don't work for money a day of your life outside the home, which, by the way, doesn't happen to very many people anymore, you need a college education for so many other kinds of reasons. Some of the research does say that it really is a bit dangerous to have a real spread in educational level of a husband and wife. That's interesting, and many of them don't realize that.
So one of the things that I read in your research and also that you talked about was that education was the top priority until marriage. Mm-hmm. And so you were just mentioning that it sometimes can be hard when the education is spread between mm-hmm. a husband and a wife. So what were some of the things that improved the commitment to education beyond that?
Well, I mentioned saving money for college. That was a big one. Having those conversations as well. One of the interesting ones that we had, and we had some great stories that people shared, was actually just getting on to campuses and visiting campuses. Same kind of experience I described earlier when I went and lived at BYU when I was 8. The more times in our statistics when we looked back, the more times that people had chances to get on college campuses, whether their parents took them there, whether they were at EFY at BYU, sports camps, their young people, youth groups were there. They went with their high school or middle school. The more times they're on college campuses and just kind of get the feel and see how things work, those linked with those people. The people that did it the most were those that graduated. The people that said they didn't have those experiences were the people that didn't go to college and or dropped out soon. So that was a deliverable. In high school, taking AP classes, taking concurrent enrollment classes, trying to do well, those things linked as well to people going to college and graduating. Statistically, there were some strong correlations, interesting correlations, with involvement in service and volunteer work. Young women who said that they did those activities in high school were the ones that ended up graduating. Taking on some leadership roles as well. If they had leadership roles in high school, so student body, clubs, but also service groups in the community, and even church groups. The sad thing that we found are those people that said they had nothing between 9th and 12th grade, if they had nothing, if they had no church leadership, if they had no leadership anyplace, statistically, it was the most significant finding in that area. The likelihood they would have been the ones to go to college and graduate was so low. So there are involvement in clubs and even in sports and those things. People that did that were more likely to go to college and graduate as well. So when we look at what does that mean, we have our study, and it just gives us some kind of clues. When we're raising kids, we want our kids to go to college. What do? We start talking about college with them when they're young, our daughters and our sons. We have them save money for college. We start field trips to campuses. We just have you know, older siblings or other people talk about college, start exploring with our kids what they love, their talents. It's not as effective just to leave that up to the schools. And then get involved in the education and so forth. And then encourage them to really do those things they need to in high school to be prepared to go to college. But that those conversations are really the most important.
And on that, you also spoke about the data on the influence of mothers and fathers, and specifically fathers.
Yeah. We have some, and you can get to more details on our website, the initiative website. But we have, you know, both some strong findings for the mother and father. I was so fascinated with the fathers, though. When the women who graduated from college thought back about their lives and described their fathers, those descriptions were quite different from the descriptions we got from women who did not graduate from college when they were thinking back. Their fathers, of people who graduated from college, their fathers spent more time with them, they were involved in homework with them, they encouraged them, they provided learning opportunities, they helped go to parent-teacher conferences, they went to other events with their, and they encouraged their daughters to really learn and develop and have confidence in those things. A lot of the women that didn't go to college just did not have fathers that were involved in those things. So it was very striking between those different ends of the spectrum. And some similar things for mothers as well. The best thing for a parent to have a child go to college is if they went to college themselves. So if a mother was a college graduate, the likelihood her daughter would go to college was very high. We did find, however, that if a mother went back to college, even one class, and the daughter saw her mother do that, like in elementary or junior or high school, she would be more likely to go to college. And the other thing we found is if a mother did not graduate, but if she talked a lot to her daughter about, I wish I would have graduated, I wish I would have done that, it would have been good for me because I know college is good in these ways, then that was helpful for statistically to see if the daughter went to college.
Can you tell us about where we can go to find more of those findings, about your website and some of the things that are offered there?
So I actually kept the Utah Women in Education Project going for about three and a half years. And as we finished the research and finished our work with that, I started working with Governor Herbert, created the Governor's Women's College Task Force. And so started working with that task force, with the governor, with the lieutenant governor, with many people from the community, including Elaine Dalton from the LDS Church, and Paul Johnson, who's the commissioner of seminaries and institutes. They served on that committee along with other religious leaders, K-12 folks, all kinds of things. We put together as a group recommendations on how do we make these changes in the state of Utah so more women will go to college and graduate. One of those recommendations was to develop a hub of coordination. So last summer, which is 2012, I merged my project, I should say mine, but there was a whole bunch of people involved that we've been working on, into, and we've changed the name, the Utah Women in Education Initiative. So in August, we released a wonderful website, which is www.utahwomeninEducation.org. So Utah Women in Education should get you there. Mm-hmm. And now we have a director and a couple of wonderful staff members that are helping, and I work with that team as a senior advisor. And we are continually developing resources for families, for churches, for K-12, lesson plan, I mean, all kinds of things. We have a lot of volunteers. We need more responsible volunteers, though. Last week, we spent a day at the legislature working for some additional funding for next year to keep it going. So we do have this Utah Women in Education Initiative now that will continue for the upcoming years, that has some podcasts on the website, legislative issues, has a whole database called the Program and Support Search of high school, college programs, and community programs that women can find in their counties and regions, like Expand Your Horizon, which is a wonderful program for junior high and high school young women to help them explore STEM areas, science, technology, engineering, and math. I was a keynote up in Ogden at one of them, and I was so impressed with that whole thing. So we have a lot of those programs on our website that parents can use to go and say, you know, here's some opportunities for my daughter. Many of them are for daughters and sons. So, and for our church, we actually have a page that is for churches support materials, and we're just getting I put a whole series of slides with my favorite quotes on there, and we have a couple of activities that are fun and some other things for families as well. So that's where what's happening now with the project, and we hope that continues for a couple of more years at least, particularly with women. But again, many of our resources are good for anyone, male or female.
And so that kind of brings me to the question of what the implications are for the members of the LDS Church. How does your data relate to young women and women in the church?
I think a lot of our sample were LDS folks. So I believe about 80%. So everything in our research applies to members of the church. But we did find some particular, we have one of our snapshots, research snapshots, that goes through our religious results. And so that one I would suggest for different people to read. But we did find very specific results that I think are interesting on how powerful the influence for young women is in church settings. I mean, next to parents, that influence of, and primarily they talked about bishops and young women leaders, but I think it could be a Sunday school teacher as well or whomever, that actually when college and the importance of college is discussed in church settings, it is very powerful on young women. I think some think culturally they've picked up this idea that maybe college isn't as important for a woman. That is just not true. That is just not true in the church. That doesn't relate to the doctrine of the church. Education has always been important for women and for men, both. So I think, you know, we were able to uncover some of the things that may be stopping us from getting those educations as women. But again, I think one of the most powerful things are young women leaders and bishops and other people in church settings, Sunday school teachers and so forth, need to understand that their words matter. Their advice, their conversations with these young women, their being a person that is open. So young women sometimes struggle talking to their parents, but if they can go to someone and you say, you hang in there, you do this. No, you need to apply for these, to go to these colleges. That will change lives. And that to me was surprising, that the church influence was right below the family influence, above the counselors in high schools and the teachers and so forth.
Interesting. And emphasizing graduation, not just going
exactly
to college, but emphasizing
exactly
graduation. So what is some of the advice that you would give to women at various points in their life? So a young woman in college, or in high school, a woman, maybe a stay-at-home mom or a working woman, what would you suggest to them?
Well, to everybody across the board, I would say get as much education as you can. That starts with a high school diploma. And in different parts of the world, that's actually a major feat for women and men to even get that. But in our culture, in the U.S., you know, most of us can do that, but we need to get that degree. But I would say to everybody, whether you're planning on being a full-time stay-at-home mom or a career woman full-time or whatever, you get prepared. One of the things I see so often in Utah are such wonderful, wonderful women who are in their late 20s and early 30s who never have not gotten married. And many of them have halted their lives and they're in waiting, I call it. And they haven't finished their education because they're just kind of waiting for something to happen in their lives. And I would say, you know, we need to be patient. We need to do all of those things we're taught. But that doesn't mean we halt our lives. We need to, no matter what our plans are in the future life or we think our plans are, we need to get an education. Don't take a year off and work or whatever. You get that education. You get that bachelor's degree. You may want to work, but, you know, the other thing I would say to any of those is, the more education you get, a master's degree, and I'm so proud of you getting yours, gives you more flexibility. It gives you more credibility, not just in paid environments, but it gives you more of a voice, but it also gives you options to pick and choose. I needed that option when, because I didn't want to be locked into a full-time job for many years. I just didn't believe that that was what I should be doing in my life. I believed that I should be at home with my children as much as possible. And more education actually gives you more choices. I was able to just lecture at hospitals and different places, teach a college class. You know, you couldn't do that. The less education you have, I think the less, you know. But certificates are a good start. But I would say have them fold into an associate's, have them fold into a bachelor's, and just take your steps, but don't halt. Mm-hmm. That's my big advice. Yeah. Don't halt.
And if there's someone that maybe has that now they've been a stay-at-home mom, how do they get back in? What would you suggest?
That's a good question. It's really nerve-wracking for people who have been out of school. But I'll tell you, once you get into, I don't know, how long did it take you? Even just a month or two, you're kind of back into it. It really is exciting. It's nerve-wracking sometimes, but you just have to go for it. I would say to these women to get a babysitter if you have to, but your kids might be in school already, and just call and make an appointment with a career counselor at UVU, University of Utah, BYU, wherever. Just, I mean, don't say, oh, next month, whatever. Just call them, email them, just do it. Go in, take your transcript, meet with somebody, figure out what's going on, figure out how to do it. In an hour, you can have all these answers that you can wonder about for years and years. So I would say to do that, and then you know where to go. There are a lot of options. So sometimes if you talk to a general counselor, I would say still, if you're thinking about nursing, go talk to a nursing counselor, an advisor as well. Talk to a couple of different people. You can make phone calls. I think you have to just be brave. You just have to step out there and say, I need answers. I'm worth it. I'm worth it. I want to do this. And if we just keep saying one of these days, you know, I've helped many women. You need to get back in there. And they meet and then they have something more concrete to work with. To conclude, I think I would say that, again, that I believe that the Lord wants us to be the most amazing women that we can become so that we can influence our children and our families and more effectively and competently work in various roles in the church, but also in the community and in workplaces as well. The Lord needs women who are strong. The Lord needs women who have voices. The Lord needs women who can change the world. And I believe that that's my quest, is really to help women understand that they can, and first of all, that they're amazing people, but they have a bigger role, a bigger calling to really use who they are and what they've developed in themselves to help impact and influence other people and influence, help further the work of the church in general. There's a lot of work to do and we need to step up and do it.
Good. Well, we'd like to thank Susan Madsen for spending this morning with us. I know that she is a busy woman, and we really appreciate her taking time out of her schedule for us. So thank you.